Today on The Pulse, we have a powerful and provocative interview with former Philadelphia Eagle and current NFL executive Troy Vincent. He shares his stories about domestic violence and his advocacy to make sure the world ultimately is a better place. But since we recorded that interview, there was the situation with Buffalo Bills safety Damar Hamlin that the whole world was talking about, and Troy Vincent, in his capacity with the NFL, was asked numerous questions about. We thought it was only appropriate for us to get a comment from him before we started today's show. The comments that he made as it relates to Damar Hamlin were fairly simple. He went on to say that while the game is guided by policy, best practices, and guidelines, the only guideline that mattered that night was the health and wellness, the life of Damar Hamlin. He expanded upon that and said the emergency action plan was executed to perfection by those who rehearse, practice, and train for in-stadium health emergencies. And closed by acknowledging that we need to recognize the power of prayer by players, coaches, staff, and fans in the stadium and those watching around the world. We appreciate him taking the time to add that to today's episode of The Pulse. And now let's get right to our discussion with former NFL player and NFL executive Troy Vincent. And welcome to The Pulse. Of course, you know that we do this every week, talking to people who are doing different things, people you may know but may not know to the level of depth that we hope you will after we speak to them. And today we have somebody who I think falls into that category. As a Eagles fan, a Philadelphian, I knew slash know him as a football player, Hall of Fame with the Eagles, the Executive Vice President of Football Operations for the NFL, a long career football related. But Troy Vincent, our guest today, has done so much more from an early age, and we appreciate you joining us on The Pulse. How are you, sir?
Good, and good morning, and thank you for having me. Thank you for finding some time to speak with me.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure to have you on. And we'll start with you and I were having a conversation kind of before we got started. And I told you that in doing the research to talk to you, as a football fan, I thought I knew everything. But the more research I did, there's so much more that you've been involved in advocating for, even pre-football. Is it surprising to you that the more people talk to you, they kind of find out that there's a lot more than perhaps they knew?
No, I'm not surprised. And especially when in the world of athletics, when attrition and rosters and turnover, and we live in a society where the consumption of information is quick. You get what you want. You look at clickbait and then you move on. When I truly believe, though, that every individual, whether they're an athlete, influencer, doesn't matter, that everyone has a gravity of a foundation about who they are, what they truly represent. But most of the time, most aren't willing to do additional research or gather additional information to find out exactly who kind of what drives people. But I'm not surprised. Most don't even know, have very little knowledge that I played for Philly, that I'm a local kid. And that's okay. I'm not offended by that. I completely understand that. You have children. Oh, you have grandchildren. So all of those things, I'm not surprised. But it is one of the reasons, actually, why my wife and I, we created just so that people can have a background information of myself, not self-promotion, but TroyVincent.com. Oftentimes I'm speaking, doing hundreds of speaking engagements throughout the year, teaching classes, and you see people looking like, who is this guy again?
Yeah.
Where am I from? But it allows people to just get a little bit more information about who's in front of you or who you just heard from. So TroyVincent.com for anyone that wants to know a little bit more information about who the man is behind either the uniform or the business card or behind the shield.
So that's really interesting that you start there, because I obviously was at TroyVincent.com. And in reading it, a lot of times people's kind of life is linear and you can start in a certain place. And in looking at that, I was like, where do we start? There's very much a faith first. There's very much a you go back to your grandparents and kind of shaping you before some of us may have known you. Trenton, as you said, a local guy. Where do you start with kind of defining how you got started on this path?
it really begins with what I've tried to share with people. To go, Vincent, my wife Tommy and I, trying to hold on to our family legacy is so important. I'm one of 4,000 living Vincents. That's extraordinary. I'm one of 4,000 living Vincents from 14 children. So my grandfather was the fourth oldest, Jefferson Vincent, who I was raised by, my grandparents, Julie and Jefferson Vincent, and my mother, who had me as a teenager. So it's that's who I am. I was raised by a World War II veteran in the city of Trenton, laborers, people that paid taxes, worked hard, and we made the best out of, you know, our situation. That's who I am. And then I'm driven. I live a life of faith. I gave my life over to Jesus Christ at the age of 16 for several reasons. I fell in love with Jesus at that time, and those biblical principles has really helped guided me through my life. And then the coaching, you know, I had the gift of athletics where I was able to do things that other people couldn't do. That was a God-given ability that he allowed me to have during my time as an athlete. But the coaches and the people who influenced me the most, I can't forget about those individuals. I was shaped by a World War II veteran and my grandfather, and my life was molded through my coaches and coaches in football. So I have an appreciation for the coach and the impact, especially for those who are fatherless. Mm-hmm. Or for those who may be missing something from their current father, the impact that the coach has on an individual's life. So, Bill, I said a whole lot to just say it's just so important for my children to know that we are standing on the shoulders of some great individuals from our family. We have family legacy that we should be proud of. And as an athlete, the same, when I went to each locker room, there was a coach, there was a player that guided me along the way. So there's never an author of ownership. It's always to pass down, acknowledge those who were before me, those who allowed me to be in this position today in my current role. People made the ultimate sacrifices years ago.
Everybody's unique. But your role, you have a lot, and I'm going to go back to kind of what shaped you and what you're advocating for, among other things. But I want to talk NFL for just a minute, because that may be why a lot of people at least initially know you. So through your career, you then went on to work in the front office, currently work in the front office of the NFL. Are you unique in kind of being that person who has a lot more going on in their life and things that they're working towards, particularly in kind of with athletes? Or do we need to take a longer look at who people are rather than just how often judgmental we are of people in the spotlight?
Bill, I would say I'm not unique at all. I just made some choices in life that just allowed me to put me in this position, but they were just simple choices that any athlete, male, female, doesn't matter what sport, frankly, any individual, and I share that all the time. I'm not unique. I just made some choices in life that allowed me to put me in positions to still be part of the game that I love, to still father my children, to be a quality husband, and now a pop-pop, a grandfather. So I'm not unique. Again, I live by the principles of my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I try to see the best in people, and you know, rather than seeing the worst in people and being judgmental. I love the game. I love everything that the game of football has done for me. So I'm not unique. I don't consider myself unique, because I got the same information as my teammates in college, in high school. The guidance counselor shared the same thing with me as he shared with my classmates. Same thing in college as a professional athlete. The information and the people that talk to everyone in the locker room. Some people just chose to take that initiative and move forward. Those resources that were offered, I just engaged with them.
Yeah, two things. First of all, you just made me feel really old when you just said you're a pop-pop. I was like, wait, what? Okay, so that made me feel old. But it's interesting because we had Marcus Smith on with us not too long ago, and he was talking about his mental health challenges and how he is now an advocate. What I do think is unique is that more people in these high-profile positions are sharing their stories. And you're mentoring people in the NFL, you know, to be human above being players. Is that unique? And do we need more of that? And are you at least encouraged that we're seeing more of that?
I encourage everyone that could share their story, because our stories, our personal experiences are not for us. They're really for other people. Nothing's unique. It may just happen at a different time in a different place, but someone has been down the road that I've, or has experienced some things that I've experienced, and vice versa. So I think it's a, we have a responsibility to share. And there were things that painful time points in my life, painful experiences in my life that have become passion points that as I matured became part of just, I feel like my life's purpose. And one of those things is advocating and being an ally for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault.
Yeah,
I have a responsibility. I think we all as a society, in particular men, we have a responsibility to end violence against young women and girls. I made that commitment to my mother at the age of 16, that same year I gave my life to Christ.
So I guess I want, you've been very open about this, both you and your wife have been very open about your personal experiences, but you talk about you gave your life to Christ at 16, you made a commitment to your mother at 16. Domestic violence was very personal to you. Share with us why this was such a personal situation for you that you committed to try to stop.
Well, I was introduced to violence against women or domestic violence. I always say around that 7 or 8 years old, because I use my brother, who's 4 years younger than I, as a barometer of thinking about during that time frame. So I was around 7 or 8, and I was introduced to domestic violence through the sounds and the violence and the beating of my mother. In North Trenton, Dolly Homes was the projects that we had that lived in. And I used to wake up to the sounds in the middle of the night of my mother being beaten, thrown around a room. And, you know, you walk out, you're underneath a bed, you go in the closet and you're just waiting. It sounds like it's eternity. And you're just waiting for complete silence. That silence meant that either he left and it was over for that time. And you walk in, whether your mother's in the living room or the bathroom or in the bedroom or hanging out the window, puddle of blood, unconscious. So that was part of my life until I was in my mid-teens. Why 16 was so important, because during that time you feel hopeless. No one, your neighbors, no one is helping you. You got two young boys knocking on a door for someone to help your mom, and people are turning their way. You hear them come up to the peek hole and then they turn back away. So this was my life, visiting my mother in the hospital, can't recognize her in emergency room. This was my life every single day for the vast majority of my teenage and my adolescence years. And it was at that age 16 where physically I felt like I can now challenge this individual to say, stop, don't put your hands on my mother anymore.
So this started 6, 7, 8. You know, you're a child watching this happen. A child needs help and support. Your mother needed help and support. One of the things that resonated with me when I first heard you tell this story is that it sounds like you and your brother tried to get help. Like, you went to neighbors, you went to different places, and people, they turned away.
Yes. And as I would say today, again, I'm mature today, it is your silence implies that you're okay with it. And that was normal. So I want you to think about that. And I'm not saying anything that anyone else, they've probably experienced, but that was normal. See something, say nothing. You know, so it's, you look for help, you look for guidance. Obviously, my grandparents and everyone was trying to, hey, mom, why are you staying? Why would you stay? But that's what she thought love was. I don't take anything away. That's where my mother was at that time in her life, where that's how men, and in particular, this individual, show love. We know that that's not love. But as you go and you seek help, no one's helping, but everyone's watching this take place. That was the culture. That was what was accepted. And it was at that age, 16, where I just said, okay, now physically we got to leave. And it was at that particular time we left that environment. We kind of moved on. And I made a commitment to my mom that I would never be what I saw. I would never treat women or be what I saw. And I would be an ally for women and children until the Lord brings me home.
Your mother wasn't just, there is no just. Okay, but your mother, in a lot of circumstances, you talk about emergency room, like your mother was beaten beyond recognition, and you were dealing with this as a child.
oftentimes I fed my mother or assisted in feeding my mother, I would say help, for years. And during that time in the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, they were doing full facial casts, where they put a full facial cast, cut the eyeball so that you can see a nose, and then, you know, mouth all wired up, jaw was broken, and you were feeding my mother through a tube, and, you know, cleaning off blood, dried up blood stains. So this was normal. And I used to share this when my mother, again, getting permission, because you want to get permission, because someone has to relive this when you tell that story. Once I got permission to share, people, no way. And they go, this can't be factual. Okay. Then you go to Trent, you go to Jersey. And everyone knows, he's absolutely correct. He is, those who know our family, know my mother, and she's a real champion. You know, my wife, fast forward, get married. My wife's a survivor. Mm-hmm. We're like full circle in our family. And I just feel like it's our responsibility as men. And Bill, if I could just back up just 1 second here. We live in a world of data. We talk about information around people, and everyone has a death about themselves. But on the issue around domestic violence and sexual assault, it hasn't changed. I was just talking to Joe Torre about this the day before yesterday, the Yankee Green, the Hall of Fame baseball. And we were, because he was one of the men that was out in front of this, with Safe at Home and his Safe at Home programs. We do a lot of work together, but the numbers haven't changed. And when you look at what does the data say in all of our companies, whether it's athletic or non-athletic, you're in technology, what does the data say? Well, the data says today that in the United States of America, every 9 seconds a woman is assaulted or beat. The data says that one in every three women is abused in her lifetime. This data says that 10 million children a year will witness some form of domestic violence or sexual assault. That's what the data says, and it hasn't changed in decades. Nearly one out of five, every teenage girl says that her boyfriend she was faced with violence or from her boyfriend, or presented with self-harm when she presented a breakup. One out of every five teenage girls.
Wow.
And then what does the data say? Every day, more than three women is murdered by their husbands or boyfriends. Every day, more than three women. And then lastly, men are two times likely to abuse women, their wives or significant other, if they witness domestic violence as a child.
Wow.
And this voices.
And those numbers have stayed the same since you were dealing with it in the 90s.
But that's
80s.
The problem.
Wow.
That means that we are okay with what we're seeing in our presence. And I just think violence amongst women and young girls, it's a choice. When I hear people say, well, he was this and, well, she wore that, BS. Violence, that's a choice. That's a personal choice to harm someone. It's about power and control. So
how did you break that? Because it started as a child. And during all this, and I go back just to touch on football, because the same time you're growing into, I guess we can call you a man at 16 when you're finally, you know, feeling physically capable of confronting this. But you're also, through all of that, developing into the player person that we became aware of. How do you break the cycle? Because that last statistic you talked about, you know, twice as likely, two times more likely to repeat that cycle, you figured out a way to break it.
And just trying to model an example. Again, I mentioned this earlier. I knew I promised to my mother and my wife I would never be what I saw. So that was being intentional and deliberate about how I spoke about women, how I engage with women and even men around the conversation or the discussion. I don't laugh at jokes that demean women. Never have as a teenager. I'm a bystander, you know, learning about bystander. I knew I didn't want to be what I saw. Mm-hmm. So modeling daily modeling behavior of what I wanted to be. And there were a lot of positive men in my life, in particular my coaches, my grandfather. So I saw the goodness of people. I saw the goodness of men. Sport is what I did. It wasn't who I was. And that's knowing that I had a gift to excel on the playing field, or the baseball diamond, or the 94 feet of, you know, hardwood floor, or track and field. That was the gift that the Lord had blessed me with.
Right.
But who I was something that I was able to model in my discussions and how I handled people on a daily basis.
Are the statistics about, you have a lot of statistics, obviously. This is something that you're actively involved in. There was a period of time where we saw a lot, probably is a stretch, but we saw high profile athletes involved in these types of situations. Statistically, is it more likely? Is it domestic abuse happening more often among athletes, or is that just something that we spend more time talking about because the people tend to be high profile?
Oh, we spend more time because they're in the public view. And this is what is domestic violence. There is no class. There is no race. There's no gen. I mean, it happens everywhere. But the athlete is where we can center. Mm-hmm. That there's a center of attention, and we use the athlete as the example of, but there are men that are just in corporate America, whether they're working at a television station, they're working at the local grocery store, sanitation. This is occurring every day in every community. And we all are affected with it. All are affected by it. Domestic violence and sexual assault is our issue. It's really a societal issue. Bill, these numbers have not changed. That's what's disheartening.
So this isn't Troy Vincent, you know, executive vice president, NFL, speaking on this because there is a problem among male athletes. This is Troy Vincent who was saying this is something that we have to own if we're going to fix this, regardless of whether you're in, you know, the NFL or work at the television station.
No question. This is not me advocating for what we've done or what we haven't done. This is me, Troy Vincent, the son of Alma, the grandson of Junior and Jefferson, the husband of Tommy Vincent. This is me as a man, as a father, as a grandfather, looking for allyship, looking for other men to come alongside myself and others to end this vicious cycle.
How important is it that you're in the room, like in several different capacities? I saw that you were one of the top 100 most influential Black executives. You're also high ranking within the NFL. You have spoken out about minority opportunities, youth football trauma, you know, CTE, all of these different domestic abuse, all of these different issues. And you're in the room to have these discussions that previously, you know, maybe there wasn't a man speaking out against domestic abuse. Maybe there wasn't an achieving African-American speaking out for the importance of minority opportunities. Like, how important is it that you're actually in these rooms to have this voice?
Well, one, I share with my children, I start with my sons, that the one thing that we can't be is we can't be an armless chair. And me being an armless chair, what is that? We go, well, what do you mean by that? It is, you talk about being in the room and people say we're having a seat at the table. Well, we have many individuals who have a seat at the table, but they make no difference. They're okay with being the only one in the room. Mm-hmm. I'm not an armless chair. I'm intentional about humanity issues. I'm intentional about people. I'm intentional about winning. Where we could make money, but we still have to do right by people. And that doesn't change. We just can't walk down the sidelines and be okay with seeing homeless people. In an institution, today I'm in this institution, representing this institution where the game is exploding from a competitive standpoint, you know, TV ratings out the you know, going through the roof. Revenues are strong. I understand we're going into a possible recession, but we still have to care for people. You know, that's, you know, the MVP is the most valuable people. Who are the people that we're touching? But being in the room, and in my opinion, I just want people to at least respect what I have to say. It may not be what people want to hear, but I bring a different position and potentially a different perspective. And in particular here at the National Football League, I feel like my role was in football and in other issues that I have an opportunity to be part of or speak about is to provide the commissioner with the information to allow him and his team to make an informed decision. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not about me being right or me being a former player or me being a black man. No. Have we thought about it this way and the overall impact that this decision that we're about to make, how does it affect everybody? So I think it's an important role that many people before me have fought for to allow people like myself to advance in the industry.
I like that the armless chair concept. It's a really interesting way to think about it because I think you're absolutely right. Regardless of industry, there are people who fight to get in the room. And then you get in the room, you're right. Like, well, I'm in the room, and my picture is on the hierarchy. You know, I haven't really said anything. I haven't really changed anything. And now I'm in the room. My sole responsibility is to try to stay in the room, not to make any difference.
You're a detriment to change. You not saying anything. You not putting forth possible solutions. You're not putting forth consideration and things that we should be. When you see wrong, you call it out. In a respectful and professional manner. But you can be doing all of the good, the movement, all of the change. You could actually be hurting those efforts when you are not active.
What do you want us to do? Us being the people watching, I mean, people who are your fans from Philly, Miami, we're on nationally, so people are seeing it. You're largely speaking to men, and we've focused on one. You also have a couple other charities, you and your wife. But what do you want us to be moved to do as we sit here and talk to you today?
So the one thing I would ask is, as we all, those that are listening in, just ask yourself, because this is really a self-reflection. I'm going to focus on the domestic violence and sexual assault. Just really ask yourself, what have you done in changing? What have you done in this area of sexual assault and domestic violence for those family members, those in your work colleagues, and really self-reflect and ask yourself, what has your silence actually implied? Mm-hmm. And I do believe, and I challenge a call to action to the men, in particular the men. I encourage you to reach out to shelters, look at your local legislators and you know, those support those organizations that are become safe houses or safe homes for families that have been displaced. It affects everyone. It truly is our issue. So that's what I would ask of yours, just a self-reflection. I'm not asking you to become a public safety officer, but really take an understanding and really research, what does bystander intervention actually mean in your role? Because it's going to take all of us. It is our issue in changing this vicious cycle.
Couple more things, and I appreciate you doing this. You actually have kind of touched on what we normally end the show with, the concept of use your voice for good. But we'll come back to that and give you a closing comment. Tell us about, we've talked a lot about the domestic violence, the sexual assault, the need to get involved, but you and your wife are doing more in terms of mentoring young people. You're actively engaged in multiple charities.
Yes. Yeah, so we have our foundations called Love Thy Neighbor. So that's ltncdc.org for any, that's ltncdc.org. And we've really focused our efforts, you know, say over the last decade in elementary education. So Tommy and I, we started our foundation in the early 90s, where we support other not-for-profit organizations in areas of housing, education, job readiness. We support a ton of advocacy groups and shelters around the country around domestic violence and sexual assault. But over the last, and we have a key, we call a key flagship activation at Super Bowl. We call it Safe Zone Activity Day. And each year in Super Bowl City, we adopt and partner with an elementary school to bridge that educational gap, to fill a gap of those educational needs for that particular school. And this year in Arizona, we've partnered with, or we would say we've adopted, the Bernard Black Entrepreneur Academy. And we really focused on K through five. And our time with working with hundreds of different organizations, Bill, through the years, sometimes we felt like we were being used, mm-hmm. where we were good resources that the general public have entrusted in us, and we share those with other institutions. And it was like putting good resources to just bad organizations that really weren't doing what they say their mission was. So we just said, you know what, let's just take a step back. Let's just focus on the future. Let's focus on children and their education, and in particular around the areas of STEM. So our focus is K through five, K through six, and really having a day or a week where the kids who don't have an opportunity to celebrate a fantastic week of Super Bowl week, to be involved in activities, we go there, we spend time with the faculty, spend time with the administrators, the principal, bringing a day and joy of with my colleagues, the other legends, active players, and really raising capital to bridge that educational divide.
So you do have support. Other players are engaged. Other players want to be involved in this as well.
Not just other players. Got legends. A lot of my former teammates, Bobby Taylor, is with us year in and year out. Tekeo Spikes, both former Eagles. We have a tremendous partner in Cigna, Zebra Technology. And when we see corporate, I see my colleagues, my former teammates, the active players all get involved. It's a special day. It's a special week. My wife, our children, our grandchildren, hundreds of volunteers. It's really a special day, again, in collaboration with a great corporate partner in Cigna, great corporate partner in Zebra Technologies, the National Football League Foundation. It is just a wonderful day watching that kid that we were once just like smile, name tag, and someone calling them by their actual name, watching kids just have fun, but walking away and not just being there for that day. We stay connected with these schools forever. So back from Atlanta, Miami, everywhere, every Super Bowl, as we partner and adopt, we stay connected because we know there's resources necessary to sustain what we just brought in that was new. So we love it. Yeah. It's just a great time for all. Again, it's my baby, my wife's baby, and we love it. We absolutely love it. We just love giving back.
Use your voice for good is how we end every episode of The Pulse. We've been talking about that, I believe, for most of 30 minutes. But in a closing comment, what does use your voice for good mean to you?
Wherever you are, doesn't matter whether you're an athlete, you're a social worker, school teacher, scientist, we all have a platform. And we call that, I like to say, the power of one. And wherever you are and whatever you do in walk of life, it just takes the power of one to begin this multiplying good. When one person see another person, typically it starts a chain reaction. I see it on the subway on a daily basis. Someone is there in need, and it takes one person in a subway car to give. Yeah. And then everyone starts to just be active, play an active role, and they participate in what we would consider good. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, doesn't matter, high profile, not, the power of one exists inside of each of us.
Man, I'm happy you're in the room. I appreciate you taking time out. I've talked before to people about the fact that I struggle with the same thing that you were talking about, people who get in the room and they're just happy to be there. You're one of those people that I think that we all should be happy about the fact that you're in the room, because you're changing the room and opening doors for more people to get into it and make some real substantive change. So I thank you. I appreciate you taking time with us. I was a fan of you as a football player before this, but now I'm just a fan. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thanks for having me. Thank you for just a rich discussion. I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. We'll talk again soon. Thank you very much. Guys, thank you so much for listening to The Pulse today with Troy Vincent, NFL player, NFL executive, and advocate. armless chair. That's something that will continue to resonate with me. I hope that it did with you as well. That whole concept of making a difference, not just being satisfied with getting into a room, actually wanting to change and expand the room when you're in there. So I appreciate who Troy Vincent is, the things that he's doing, and encouraging more of us to get involved, not remain silent on important issues like domestic violence and sexual assault. A reminder that if you ever want to watch the show on TV and you're in Philadelphia, we air on Fox 29 Monday evenings at 6:30. We also air nationally on Mondays on Fox Soul, and every episode of The Pulse you can find on YouTube by just going over there and search The Pulse with Bill Anderson. Some really great interviews that if you haven't seen them or listened to them, I'm sure you will enjoy. Hit me up on social media if you have any questions or comments. I'm at Bill A. Fox 29 on all platforms. Thank you again for joining us on The Pulse, and I leave you as I always do, reminding you that whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.